Masechet Baba Mesirah Daf Chaf Bet. We're in the middle of a long sugya about Yeush Shelo Midaat. If someone loses something but they don't realize that they lost it, eventually when they realize, it's a kind of thing that they will have despair because there's no sign on it or it's something that's not a significant value. But right now they don't even know about it. So this is a machloket. Abaye says Yeush Shelo Midaat Ena Yeush. It's not considered despair until the person who lost it recognizes they lost it and then says, oh, I despair. However, Rava says you can predict it. And even before the person even knows that they lost it, since eventually when they find out, they will certainly have despair, we can consider it despair from now. And therefore, someone who finds it can keep it even from now, according to Rava. So Rava is more lenient, Abaye is more stringent. Yesterday's daf, we saw seven proofs, challenges against Abaye, and we answered all of them. Now we're going to see a few more. It depends how many more, it depends how you count. If you count just the Tashemaz, which is the way we were counting yesterday, in other words, just the sources that are quoted, then you have seven challenges against Abaye, and then on this stuff, we're going to have five more, making 12 altogether. However, often we see Sugyot have 7 or 7 and 7, 14, and so if you want to count it as 14, although you don't have to, 12 is also a nice number, but to round it up to have 7 and 7, it is possible to do it in that way. If we include two questions that are from the same source, but not just from the Resha, also from the Sefa, so that on yesterday's daf already, there was something from the Resha, and we answered that already for Abaye, so we kind of included that, like this would be obvious, but really it is a question against Abaye, and then an answer, and then the Sefa, we asked, oh, what about, that's a challenge to Rava, so really that could be the first challenge against Rava, so if we include this, account this as a separate question, and also coming up there's going to be a Tashma where we have one challenge to Rava and a follow-up from the Sefa. So if you count those, then you'll get to 14 challenges altogether, the first seven being all Abaye, against Abaye, and then the next ones being against Rava, Abaye, Rava, Rava, Abaye, Rava, Rava. So most of them against Rava, and the conclusion will be Tiyufta, Rava, Tiyufta. So this makes a nice structure. We start off totally against Abaye, but we're able to answer all of them, and then we turn the tables to challenge Rava mostly, and then those challenges are successful. It seems that the memorizers, the way it was memorized, there is a mnemonic at the beginning of this sugya right over here, and it has 15 letters, so it seems that the mnemonic device recognizes more than just 12 sources, 12 challenges here. Okay, but there are different ways to break up the questions. All right, here we go. In our current count, the last one here against Rava was number 8, so this would be number 9. Tashema haganav shenatal mizeh venatal lazeh, vechen gazlan shenatal mizeh venatan lazeh, vechen yarden shenatal mizeh venatan lazeh, ma shenatal natal o ma shenatan natan. Here's a braita that says, a thief, a ganav, means im bamachteret, ima se haganav, thief in the night, who's cloaked and is scared. He's scared to be found out. Who takes something from one, steals something from one person, and he gives it to another person. So that second person now can keep it. And so to a gazlan. A gazlan is in the middle of the day, up front. He's not scared of anybody. He just goes and grabs something right from a person in daytime. And he also takes something and gives it to someone else. Or the Jordan River comes and picks up someone's stuff that's on there in their backyard and takes it from his backyard and moves it to someone else's backyard. In all these cases, that which was taken is taken, and that which is given is given. In other words, the party that gets the item can keep it, because we assume that there was yeush on the part of the person that lost it or from whom it was stolen. Of course, course, the thief still has to pay the value of what was taken, but because he gave it to someone else, and already the owner despaired, so then there is a legal transfer of ownership. So now let's analyze these cases. Why do we assume that there is despair, and therefore the next person can keep it? Well, it makes sense in the case of a daytime thief, and the Jordan River, the person sees it, right? He sees when there's a river flooding, and he sees his lawn chair is taken away, or when someone grabs something out of his hand, and as he figures, oh well, I'm not going to get it back. And so he has despair, and thereafter, once goes into someone else's hand, so that new person actually acquires it and doesn't have to give it back. But a thief in the night, he comes sneakily and he comes and takes it. The owner doesn't even know it was gone until one day he comes and checks on it. But in the meantime, it goes to a third party. That should not be considered a valid transfer. So why is this considered transfer? This seems to be a proof for dava that since he eventually will have despair, we assume he has despair until from now. But this is a challenge against Abaye, who says, no, if he doesn't know that it's gone and actually has despair, then the despair doesn't count. So how are we going to answer it? La Papa says, when it says ganav, it doesn't mean a thief in the night, but rather an armed robber. Wait a second, if it's an armed robber coming face to face with the guy, then isn't that a gazlan? And the answer is, and we already said gazlan, the answer is two types of gazlan. In fact, this armed robber is somewhat like a ganav. Just like a ganav comes at night because he's scared to confront anyone, so too someone who comes armed is also scared to confront someone. That's why they bring their gun or their knife. Unlike just a complete thug, has no care about anybody, and he'll come even without arms and just grab something from somebody else. And so therefore, it could be that we're talking about an armed robber. Since that is so, the person, the victim of the theft knows in all these cases that it was taken from him and has to spare it right away, and that's why the third party can keep it. Okay, next challenge, Tashima. Shataf nahar korav esav abanav untano betoch sede habero. Hare elu shelo mipne shenityashu habealim. Tamad nityashu habealim ha-setama la. If a river comes and sweeps away someone's beams or wood or stones, and it takes them and puts their deposits, the river deposits them, in the field of someone else. So the new person can keep it because we assume that because the original owners have despaired of them. Okay, now that's the end of the Braita. Let's analyze the words. It's only the next person can only keep it, the receiver can only keep it, because the original owner despaired. That's a proof for Abaye that they actually have to despair. But if not, if we don't know whether they despaired or not, then they cannot keep it. So that's a proof for Abaye, challenge against Rava. And the answer is, we're talking about a case where our owner can go and rescue it, right? And therefore, he doesn't despair. He figures, okay, I'll go and get it. Just the fact that it was swept away, but okay, so fine, it was swept away. He'll go in the water and he'll be able to get it. And therefore, we don't know if he despaired or not. And maybe he won't despair at all. And that's why he cannot keep it unless he cannot get it back. If it goes so fast and he can't get it back, then we know he despaired. Okay, we ask a follow-up. Well, if this is a case where he can get it back, it's going slowly, then look at the continuation of the Braita. If says, if the original owner is running after the item to try to get it, then the receiver has to give it back, because then it's obvious that he does not despair. He's running after it. He still wants it. Now we have a question. If it's going so slowly that he can get it pretty easily, then why does he have to be running after it? Even if he's not running after it, we cannot assume that he has despaired or even will despair. He's just figuring, I don't want to get wet right now, right? I'll go and get it later. It's going slowly. We know he can get it. So it doesn't really matter if he's running after it. Even if he were not running after it, the new guy would have to return it. Afilu en mida defin nameh. So the answer is, hachana hacha b'maiskinan b'yicholin la'asil ayide ha'dehak. Mida defin la'ayyush en mida defin ayyush miya'ash. The Sefa is talking about a case where, well, he can save it, but with great difficulty. So if he's running after it, then it's clear that he does not despair. He's running, he's as fast as he can, and he's going to really try to get it, although it's very difficult. But if he's not running, and it's very difficult to get, then that shows that he despaired, right? It's really going fast. He's sitting there doing nothing. Okay, that's clear if he's sitting doing nothing, even though he could possibly get it if he really tries, but he's not trying. The fact that he's not trying means he had Ye'ush already. Therefore, this entire Beraita is consistent with Rava. If we can assume that the person will have Ye'ush, then, yeah, the next guy can keep it. But if through his actions we cannot assume that he even will have Ye'ush, then the next guy has to, the receiver has to give it back. Okay, next proof, Tashema. Kesad amru ha-torem shelo midat terumato teruma, hadesh yara letoch sedeh havero, viliket v'taram shelo brishut, im hoshesh mishum gezel en terumato teruma, ve'im lav terumato teruma. Abraita says, how can you have a case where someone takes teruma from someone else's grain without his knowledge, and yet it's valid, that teruma is valid? Well, here's an example. You have someone that goes to his friend's field, and he goes and gathers some grain, and he takes teruma from it without the explicit permission of the owner. Now, if we suspect him of stealing, meaning he came without permission and the owner would not want him to be there and not want him to do that, then the teruma is invalid. A person cannot take teruma from someone's field without their acknowledgement, without their agreement. But if we do not suspect him of stealing, in other words, even if the owner didn't tell him to necessarily, but the owner is okay with it, eventually, when he finds out about it, then the teruma is valid teruma. Now, uminayin hu yodea im hoshesh mishum gezel v'im lav, the Beraita continues, how can we know whether the owner is going to suspect him of being a thief or not, or he's okay with it? When the owner eventually comes home and he sees this guy taking the grain and taking teruma, if the owner says, oh, why'd you take the medium quality teruma? Why didn't you take the best quality teruma? Now, it depends. If there is, in fact, higher quality, then the teruma is valid, because that shows that the owner is in agreement, is happy that he took teruma. His only complaint is, oh, you should have taken even more. You should have taken even better quality. But obviously, he's saying it's good. So even though at the time that the teruma was taken, He the owner didn't know about it, but nevertheless, the fact that he finds out about it later and says, good job, you should have even done more, that shows that he would have wanted it, and therefore the teruma is valid. But if not, if there's no higher, then the teruma is not valid, because then how can you interpret his words? He comes and finds that the guy took from the best quality available, and he said, why'd you take from that? You should have taken an even better one. That means he's being sarcastic, right? Because there is no better one. He's like, oh, why? How come you only took that? Why didn't you take everything? So he is not okay with this guy coming and taking teruma for him, and he's being sarcastic and making fun and saying, oh, why don't you take even more? Okay, so then it's not valid. So whatever he says afterwards shows what his intention would have been. If the owner comes and physically gathers some more grain and adds to the teruma, then for sure, no matter what he says, whether and even whether or not there is better quality, the fact that he's adding to it shows that he's certainly happy with what the this guy did already, and then the teruma would be valid. Now we ask our question: V'chinim sot yafot mehen terumato teruma amai beidana de taram ha la havaya da. So in the case where he find there are better ones, and you said then the teruma is valid, but how could it be valid at the time that this trespasser comes and takes teruma? The owner didn't know about it. So what does it help if he will know about it, but right now he doesn't know about it? So this would be a proof for Rava. It's true, it's from a different field, not about lost items, but about taking teruma without someone's permission. But the idea is the same. The principle is the same. That just like Rava says that if a person will have Ye'ush in the future, we can consider that Ye'ush even from now. Same thing here. If the owner will be okay with this trespasser taking teruma in the future, then retroactively we see, oh, he is okay with it. That means he would have been okay with it to begin with, and the teruma is valid. That's good for Rava. This goes against Abaye, who says that you have to actually know about it in order for it to be Ye'ush. You have to know that it was stolen in order to have despair. Even if he will have despaired, that's not good enough. And here also, then we should say, according to Abaye's principle, even though eventually he comes and says, oh, good job, I'm so happy that you took teruma, you should even take more, but doesn't matter. At the time, we don't take it retroactively. At the time that he gave it, the owner didn't know. All right, challenge against Abaye. Tidgema Rava liba de Abaye. These are my favorite words on this stuff. Rava gave an answer on behalf of Abaye. You see the nature of the machalokot, right? Between Amoraim, that these are not personal. We did see one case before where it got personal and they said went out of line and said, you fool. But generally, you see that they're working together to sharpen each other, right? Rava takes one stance, Abaye takes another stance, but they're not so sure of themselves, right? And if there's a challenge to Abaye, and Abaye hasn't come up with a solution yet, Rava, who's disagreeing with him, comes and saves the day for Abaye, right? He wants to, if he's going to win, he wants to win fair and square. In other words, they both really want to get at the truth. And so Rava says, listen, here's an answer for you, right? This is not going to be the final blow, because here's an answer. All right, so it shows you the, even while they are arguing and have a serious controversy that goes on, still they're both really seeking to know the truth. And so the answer is, the Shavia Shaliach, the owner, must have made him an agent. Otherwise, he couldn't have taken teruma without the other person, without the owner knowing. You can't just trespass and take teruma. He said, you know, can you do me a favor? Go take teruma for me. Hachinami mistabera. And in fact, this is a best reading of the Braita. Because if it's not an agent, then would anybody say that this is valid teruma? Va atem gam atem amar hachamana l'rabot shiluchachem. Ma atem l'da'atchem af shiluchachem l'da'atchem. Because here we have a special derasha regarding teruma, that says gam atem, and we learn from that gam atem that comes to include an agent. But an agent works the same way as the owner, just like the owner has to knowingly take teruma, so to an agent has to knowingly take teruma with the knowledge of the sender. So this teruma is not the kind of thing that you can separate and just not knowing what you're doing, separating for some other reason, and then afterwards say, oh, you know what? This will be for teruma. No, it has to be done knowingly at the time that it's taken, and therefore there's not going to be any kind of retroactive designation. Nobody thinks that such a thing can work. And so there's no problem. Ela hachamais kinan kegon de shavia shaliach. So how do we explain this entire braita? If he comes and says, you know, this is a good job, what does all this mean? If he made him an agent in the first place, so how could it be a problem? So it's like this. He made him an agent. He says, go and take teruma, but he didn't say which specific crops he should use to separate, to make, to designate as teruma. The best ones, the medium ones, how much? Now this owner, generally in past crops, he usually takes from the middle amount. But then the agent went and he took from the best crops. And then the owner comes and says, oh, why don't you take the best crops? Now, what does he mean by that? If there are, in fact, even better crops than that, then he means it sincerely, right? And he says, oh, you took from the better ones? I wish you would have taken from the best of the best. So then it means he was good. He was happy with what the agent did, and he wants to make it even more. But if the owner doesn't have any better quality than that, then you know he means it sarcastically. Why don't you take from the best? Why don't you take even more? He means that I don't like what you did. And although he made him an agent, but the agent has to know what the sender wants. Even though the sender didn't say, since he usually gives medium quality, that means the agent, although he was appointed as an agent, he veered from his agency by giving the top when the guy would have wanted the medium. That's what the braita means, and so we resolved that question. Now we have a story that's just tangentially related to the halakha that we just mentioned. This is not a proof or disproof. It's a story about Amemad and Morzutra and Rav Asher, three sages that went to the garden, a nice Persian word, bustana, of Mari bar Isak, who was a very wealthy person. Aiti arise tamre v'rimone ushta kamaihu, the sharecropper of Mari bar Isak, who's the owner. The sharecropper comes and serves them. They're important guests, great sages. He gives them dates and pomegranates. Two of the sages eat it, and Morzutra would not. Why not? Because he said, I don't know if the sharecropper got permission from the owner to serve us these items. The sharecropper, he does get to keep a share at some point. But did the owner want him to take these very ones and give it to us? So he thought that this might be stealing. But the other two, they assumed that it would be okay. Adhachi atamari bar Isak ashkachinu v'amar le la'arise amai la'aitit lehu rabbanan mehanach shapirta. In the meantime, Mori bar Isak, the owner, came and saw them, and he saw that the sharecropper had served some pomegranates and dates from the owner's property, and he told the sharecropper, why didn't you give them the better quality? Why'd you give them just the medium quality dates and pomegranates? Should have given them even the better ones. So that seems to show that the owner was happy with the sharecropper. The sharecropper intuited, right? That I know my master. The owner, Mari, he loves when sages come and visit. Certainly he would want me to serve them. Well, imagine if he didn't, and the owner came, oh, the special guest came, and you didn't give them anything. So the sharecropper knows that, and now by coming and saying this line, let's see what he meant. Now the owner came and said, you shouldn't have given them even better. That seems to show that he is happy that the sharecropper took some fruits and gave it to them. So then the two sages that ate tell Morzutra, okay, how come now you're still not eating? Look, the master is here. And he said, Chazak Baruch, thank you for serving the guests. So now you certainly have no qualms. And the sages quote the braita that we just had. That's why we bring the story in, right? After all, if an owner comes and finds a trespasser taking teruma, that, and he says, "Oh yes, oh I'm glad you did that. You should have given even more, even better ones." And in fact, there were better ones. The Terumah is valid. So same thing here. You should apply that halacha, and all the ones Terumah. The other one is about whether or not he's stealing from the owner. Since the owner came and said, "Chazak Baruch, you should have taken even better ones." That means that what he gave us is valid. Is not stealing. If we can take it legally. And the Morzutra answered, "No, I learned the following from Rava, that when the Baraita says that if the owner says, 'Why don't you get the better ones?' then we assume that he and there are better ones. Then we assume that he means Chazak Baruch. I'm glad you did that." And the Terumah is valid, that law applies to Terumah only because it's a mitzvah to give Terumah, and we assume that when the guy came, even if he himself would normally give Benonit, but now he finds that this trespasser gave the higher quality, we assume it's a mitzvah. He says, "You know what, now that you did it, great, you know what, you should have even give better ones." There it makes sense. However, here where the guests are right there and the owner, Marie Bar Isa, comes and says, "You should have given better ones," what else is he going to say? Can you imagine if he says, "Oh, you know what, how dare you give fruit to these guests?" He's not going to insult the guests in front of them. Right, the opposite. He has to show now graciousness because otherwise he'll be embarrassed. He comes and says, "Oh, you gave them? You should have given them even better ones. These are important guests." Of course he's going to say that because he's embarrassed. But it could be he doesn't really mean it. Maybe he would not. He doesn't give the best quality. But he has a business to run. The best quality is going to sell for a high price. Okay, guests come and maybe he shouldn't have given them the lower quality ones. As important as the guests are, right, it's good enough. Okay, so here we can't tell what he really means when he comes and says you should have given them the highest quality. Even if he has highest quality, it doesn't mean he really meant it. And so that's why Morzutra refused to eat. He wasn't 100% sure that the owner, Mari Bar Isaac, really, really wanted to give them the fruit wholeheartedly, and so he refrained from eating. All right, and now we get to the next challenge, Tashema. Odehu hatal alehen v'samach hareze b'chiyutan. There's a law that any food has to get wet first in order to become susceptible to tum'ah. So you have fruit and it's sitting there and never became wet before. Even if something tameh would touch it, it doesn't become tameh. Only when it gets wet and has to get wet with the knowledge/agreement of the owner. That means meaning the owner wants it to get wet. Not that he was like, "Oh no, it's going to get wet and ruin," and wants to dry it off. Okay, so if something, once something gets wet, it doesn't make it tameh. It just means now it's susceptible to becoming tum'ah from that point on. Okay, that's what we learn from the pasuk that says v'chi yutan, if water, dew, and other liquids, these seven liquids, come upon a food, then it becomes susceptible to tum'ah. So now, here's the halacha. You have a farmer, he has some produce out in the field. And at night, right, overnight, dew falls on it. He comes in the morning and he sees the dew on it. If the dew is still there, it didn't dry up yet, and he's happy about it because the dew keeps it nice and fresh, then that becomes susceptible to tumah. The law of chiyutan kicks in. However, nigebu afa pisha samach enan bechiyutan. If he comes out, he woke up late, it's already 11 o'clock, and there was dew on it, but the dew already dried up. But he can tell that there had been dew on it, and he's happy. "Oh, I'm so glad that there was dew on the fruit, and look how it kept it fresh. But right now, it's not wet." Then it does not become susceptible to tum'ah because he doesn't know about it. He didn't know that it was wet at the time that it was wet. When he comes and finds out, he's happy now. But you can't say, "Oh, retroactively, since he's happy that it got wet now, therefore retroactively, when it was wet, it became susceptible to tum'ah." Right? We don't say that. So let's analyze. Tama mai la mishum de lo amrinan kevandi glamilta dehashta nichale mikadanamin. So isn't the reason why when it's dry now that it doesn't become susceptible to Tum'ah isn't the reason, because we do not apply the principle that once it's revealed now that he was happy about it, so too we retroactively assume that from the outset he was happy about it, and therefore, right, the potential is like actual. You see, we don't say that. This is a challenge against Rava, because Rava says even before the person knows that an item is lost, eventually he will despair, so we consider it as if he already despaired now. That's what he says. And so therefore, if Rava were writing this Baraita, he should have said eventually, if he's happy that it was wet, even if it's not wet now, we should apply his happiness even before. But we don't say that. So Rava, how can he explain this? And the answer is Shaneh Hatam Dichtiv Ki Yiten Ad Sheyiten, because the pasuk, although we read it as a Ki Yutan, as if there was a vav, but it's written Chaser without a vav. And so if you read it in simply where just Yod Taf Nun, you'd say Yiten. Yiten sounds like it has to actively become wet. He has to make it wet. So therefore, it only becomes susceptible to Tum'ah if he makes it wet, has to be wet at the time. So therefore, you can say that regarding lost items, we'll apply the retroactive principle. But when it comes to being susceptible, since the pasuk says Yiten, has to be active and has to be wet at the time that he knows about it. Now we follow up a challenge to this. What about in the Resha? Because in the Resha, it says if it's still wet and he sees it, then it's Kiyutan. Wait a second, but he didn't put the water on it. The water dropped down from the atmosphere and became dew. He wasn't even around when it became wet. If you take Ki Yiten literally, that he has to put water on, he has to make it wet actively, then even in the Resha, since the water just fell on it and he didn't put it on there, so also it should not be considered a susceptible to Tum'ah. So how are you going to answer that? Hatam kedra papa dera papa rame ketiv ki yiten vekarinan ki yutan hakesad ra papa brought up a contradiction. Here it's not two different verses, but rather the same verse between the way we read it and the way it's written. It's written ki yiten without a vav, which means active. You have to actually make it wet. But yutan is passive. Even if it was put, water was put on it, it became wet. However it became wet, it also becomes susceptible. So which one is it? Hakesad ba'inan ki yutan dumya dechiyiten mayiten ladat af yutan ki yutan nami ladat. It has to become wet in a way that's similar to actively making it wet. Just like making it wet, you have to know about it. So too, if it becomes wet, that's fine, but you have to know about it. In other words, in order for something to become susceptible to Tum'ah when getting wet, the owner doesn't have to actually make it wet actively. It could be that passively it becomes wet by getting rained on, by having dew on it, something spills on it. But only if the owner knows about it. He's aware. He sees it while it's wet, and he says, and he's glad. Oh, I'm happy that it got wet. Then it becomes susceptible to Tum'ah. But if he doesn't know about it at all, then it doesn't become susceptible to Tum'ah. That is a special law regarding Tum'ah, and that will not apply to despair when it comes to lost items. All right, next challenge. Tashema, Damar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Yishmael Ben Yehosadak, Minayin La'aveda Sheshetafah HaNahar Shehi Muteret, Dikhtiv, Vechen Ta'aseh L'chamaro, Vechen Ta'aseh L'simlato, Vechen Ta'aseh L'chol Abedat Achicha, אשר תובד ממנה ומסתה. מי שעבודה הימנו מסויה אסל כל אדם, יעשה זו שעבודה ממנו ואינה מסויה אסל כל אדם. We have a baraita in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, who said the name of Rabbi Yishmael ben Yosadak. How do we know that a lost item that was swept away by a river and the item was deposited in a receiver's field, that it's permitted, or you find it in the river and you're able to salvage it? How do you know that you're allowed to keep it? And it sounds like you're allowed to keep it no matter what, even if it has a siman on it. Because the pasuk says, this is what you have to do. You have to return a lost item, whether it's the person's donkey or his clothing or any item that your brother loses and you find it. That's what the pasuk says. We make a midrash on the pasuk. Only items that are lost from him, but found by other people. In other words, as long as they're within civilization, if someone finds loses something in the city, in the marketplace, in a street, right, somewhere where people are around, then the finder has to go and return it. But that excludes something that's lost, not only to the owner, but it's lost to humanity. If something gets thrown into the ocean, then that's it. It's lost, not just that this person lost it, but someone else is likely to find it. This is most likely lost forever by anyone. Now, therefore, if something gets swept up in the river, the assumption of most people is now it's in no man's land, right? No man goes there, and therefore it's considered lost. If someone happens to be able to salvage it, he's fishing and he brings up this boot and he says, oh, look at this nice boot. So he can keep it, even if it has the name of the guy who was originally it was. He does not have to return it. V'isura dumya dehetera. Ma hetera ben di'it basiman ben delet basiman shara. Af isura ben di'it basiman ben delet basiman asura tiyubta derava tiyubta. That was the braita, and now we make the final proof. We're going to compare the prohibition to the permission. Just like regarding the permission, in this baraita, it doesn't matter whether it has a distinguishing mark on it or not. You're permitted to find it because it went into no man's land, and therefore you can find it no matter what. So too, the opposite should be true. In cases where it's prohibited, meaning person lost something, but he doesn't even know that he lost it, then it won't matter whether there has a distinguishing mark on it or it does not have a distinguishing mark on it, because the owner doesn't know that it was missing, right? We said before that if it has a distinguishing mark, according to everybody, then we assume the owner does not despair. I have a mark on it, right? I'm sure someone will find it and I will get it back. So if it has a mark on it, it's prohibited. So we learn from this baraita that there's no difference. Just like for permission, there's no difference whether it has a mark on it, so too for prohibition. And just like if it has a mark on it, the person who keeps it is prohibited, who finds it is prohibited from keeping it, he has to return it. So too, even if it has no mark on it. And if it has no mark, we can assume that eventually when he realizes that he lost it, he will have despair, but right now he doesn't know that he lost it, and did not have despair, even though it has no mark, and he will have despair. It doesn't matter. It still has the same prohibition, and that is a proof for Abaye, and this is a final challenge against Rava. I wonder if Rava thought twice about helping his friend Abaye. I'm sure he was happy he helped Abaye, because now they were able to arrive at the truth. V'hilcheta kivated Abaye b'ya'al kegam, and halacha follows Abaye in six cases, and the yod of Ya'al Kegam is our case, Ye'ush Shelo Mida'at.
Amar le Rav Acha bered Rava le Rav Ashe, v'chim achadi totav Rava, hane tamre de zika, hechi achlinan lehu. Rav Acha, the son of Rava, asks Rav Ashe, now that we have rejected Rava to be as halacha lemaase, the dates that fly off of trees, and you know they blow off the trees and they're on the floor, everybody eats, takes them up, picks them up on from the floor and eats them, assuming that the owner has despaired. But that halakha is only true according to Rava, who says that eventually when they realize that these fell off their tree, they will despair. But right now, the owner doesn't even know that they fell off the tree and hasn't yet despaired. And since halakha is like Abaye, these should be prohibited from taking. And the answer is, as we've said earlier, because there are creepy crawly creatures that would eat these dates otherwise, so the owner of the trees already despairs from them from the beginning. So anything that falls, that's it. Within a few minutes, they're going to be eaten by whatever, you know, animals or creepy things that are on the floor. And therefore, since he already has Ye'ush, therefore, anyone who finds them can take them. What if the trees belong to orphan minors and they do not have the legal competence to relinquish their property, to say, it's okay, I despair, anyone can take them. They actually do not have the legal ability to do that. So how could we take it from them? And then his answer was, we don't assume that a valley of land belongs to orphan. You're just walking on the road and you see some dates that flew off a tree on the floor. And so most people are not orphans, so you don't have to worry about that. Muchzak v'amed mai, kerachta mai, amale asiran. Okay, but what if you know this particular area here is owned by orphans and these dates are those of orphans? Or what if the area is surrounded by a fence that prevents the creepy crawlies from getting them? Or a mat, and it falls on the mat, and they will be safe from, and they won't get ruined. What about in that case? And his answer, well, in that case, then yes, in fact, it's prohibited since the owner doesn't know about the falling and we cannot assume that they would automatically despair, or it belongs to orphans who cannot despair, right? And it's safeguarded. Well, then in fact, you are not allowed to eat them because halacha is like abaye until they actually know about it and despair. It still belongs to the owner and the finder cannot keep it for himself. Baruch Adonai le'olam. Amen v'amen.